Come on now. Come on. Not with a guest. No, not with a guest in here. A distinguished guest like Lorenzo Alexander deserves better than Loverboy.
We flashed the two for the second hour of the Doug and Wolf Show right in Paul's face.
I mean,
Zoe says, though, he's not flashing anything because he was sick of people around him flashing the four
right.
when he was a cow. So he doesn't want to see any of it.
Yeah. You've heard of rising tides that lift all boats there, Lorenzo. Loverboy is the plunging landslide of underachievement that brings down Arizona. This song is worse for workplace productivity than Marsh Madness.
I hear you, brother.
The big question about this, and this is kind of part of Wolf's college career and the story behind Loverboy of Wolf watching his beloved brother Craig get ready to go out that night and take on Orchard Park. We've never talked about Paul's football career in front of you, Zoe.
Or the lack of?
Yeah. Paul claims to have been, and I don't know if I have the story right, Paul, he claims to have been on a field with Ronnie Lott.
No. I was the high school Ronnie Lott. That's what I'm saying.
In the
Santa Teresa Athletic League, Zoe, that's what they used to call me, the high school Ronnie Lott. Okay, somebody turns on the lie detector. There we go.
Because the big question is, if Paul would get hurt on his way to a microphone,
right,
he would have to sit out a sportscast.
And
yet,
true story.
Ronnie Lott will cut off a finger to keep playing.
Right. True story. At Cal, as a freshman, I walked over thinking I might be a walk-on for Cal football, and I saw guys like Lorenzo Alexander. I said, no, I won't be walking on to the Cal. And then I walked over. This is a true story. I walked over to the Cal baseball diamond, and I saw Jeff Kent playing shortstop. And I said, you know what? I won't be playing baseball either. Let's get into the academics.
How did that go for you? Right. Didn't you have like 9 degrees?
Just stop it.
I can't remember with Paul's life. So Lorenzo Alexander, Bills linebacker, filling in for Wolf today. And there's an interesting dynamic going on for the Cardinals draft. And I want your opinion on how you would feel, and maybe just last year.
Yeah.
Josh Allen walks into the front office and says, this Wyoming receiver is fantastic. Are you like, shut up, kid? Or do you, hey, it's my quarterback? Because even though Wyoming, slightly below Oklahoma,
right.
CeeDee Lamb, clearly a top 10 caliber player, and yet does he feel the biggest need of the Cardinals? Does he not? Yet
right.
You have a head coach that actually uses Oklahoma terminology in his offense, so it's an easier transition for the quarterback. And now you could go get the quarterback's favorite wide receiver when you're running a similar offense. Is it a no-brainer, or do you say, Kyler, thanks for your opinion, we're moving on?
Yeah, well, it definitely makes sense. And obviously, Kyler being the franchise quarterback and having the success that he had, his opinion carries some weight. Obviously, it doesn't carry the same weight as a Tom Brady or Drew Brees just because of where he's at in his career.
Mm-hmm.
But you definitely take, okay, so Kyler obviously loved him when he was there. And if Kyler didn't love him, then you're like, oh, maybe we're going to pass and go get somebody else. But, okay, Kyler loves him, so let's do our own evaluation and see if it lines
so
up.
So almost a lack of endorsement would talk louder than
right.
the endorsement.
Yeah, okay. I may want to go get somebody else because if those two guys can't get along, well, I'm going to bring somebody in here where I'm stuck with them now trying to work together for the next 4, maybe potentially 5 years. And it's you're not going to have any protection because the relationship isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So now that he's at least asking, okay, we got the back end of our quarterback. He likes him. Now let's go see if everything adds up about him on our own and see if those two things align. Because oftentimes, players, we have a bias. You know, you have your boy. He's your guy. You're hanging out, going out, you know, going over each other's house, spending time together. And so you're more willing to overlook certain deficiencies, whether as a player or as a person, because you're his friend.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so as an organization, you have to step back, obviously, because now you're making a real investment in a guy. As far as your franchise from a GM perspective, and so you have to make sure it aligns and that Kyler's not just being his homeboy vouching for a guy.
And I feel like, true, and I don't know if anybody agrees with this, I feel like the Cardinals are picking 5th. And the reason why that's an opinionated statement and not fact is because you have your quarterback,
right.
And almost every rumor says 3 quarterbacks are going in the top 8. So since you're not in the Joe Burrow sweepstakes,
right.
Since you don't care if Justin Herbert's going to make it, you're really picking fifth out of position players. So you're going to have unbelievable defensive tackles in Derek Brown of Auburn and Javon Kinlaw out of South Carolina. You might, I don't think so, but you might have a wonderful cornerback in Okuda from Ohio State. I don't think he'll be there. And then there's the question, Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb, which Wolf actually asked to Steve Keim last week.
Both. They're just different. Yeah. You know, they're different games. I mean, you watch CeeDee Lamb, and there are some things that come to mind when I watch him that remind me a little bit of DeAndre Hopkins. You know, you talk about a guy that maybe isn't the fastest vertically, but is gritty, tough, runs great routes. And then you got Jerry Jeudy, who is so smooth and accelerates in and out of breaks and is sort of like a Gumby doll. He's got no stiffness. So they're both great players. I think they're going to have exceptional careers.
Well, if the DeAndre Hopkins comp is accurate, and by the way, that comment went national. There are a lot of entities picked that up around the country, that comparison right there, and quoted that exact interview. If you're telling me you got a DeAndre Hopkins, okay, I am going receiver number 8. I mean, that's a done deal. I'll run that card up to the commissioner. There's no doubt about it. Now, I'm still of the opinion you can get a very good receiver at the top of the second round because that position group is so loaded. My question to you is, though, is do you hesitate to go with Kyler Murray's guy? Because you don't want to empower and enable your quarterback, as valuable and as vested as you are in him, right, as the future franchise quarterback for the next decade, do you really want to give him a sense that he's involved in personnel decisions? Do you want to draw that line and say, you know what, hey, young man, you're not LeBron James. You're not dictating everything from the GM's office.
Well, I don't know if that's going to really empower him in that sense. And I mean, I don't know Kyler personally, so I don't know what type of personality and character that he has, but you know, from the things that I hear he's a great guy. And so he's just giving his opinion of what you're doing. You're not empowering him. He's not sitting in the meetings with you and watching film and breaking down and telling. He just gave his opinion, vouched for a guy, and just probably kept moving. And if it aligns, that's not going through my mind if I'm Keim, like, okay, Kyler said I like this guy, but coming down to both of these guys, I'm going to go with Jeudy because I don't want Kyler to feel a certain type of way. No, I'm picking the best guy that's for my team. And, you know, obviously hearing about how Kyler is, that's not going to say, well, oh, now I got more power, I got more juice.
Without the power trip, Kyler is trying to put himself into the conversation because we asked Steve Keim, okay, since Kyler knows CeeDee Lamb, right, how much does his happiness or how much does his opinion play into this?
Well, from my text stream, you can tell Kyler likes him, but he is, you know, you always would also lean towards guys that you know. Again, I just talked about the inexact science that the draft process is and the percentage of success rates in the first round. Right. If you know the person or you have confidence in who they are through the information you attain, you know, it certainly gives you more confidence.
It is a famous line, but he gave us a stat that they said they did deep research. 47% of first round picks make it.
Yeah, that's about right.
47%.
Most of the leaguers, low-round draft picks, undrafted.
And as a reminder, where was Lorenzo Alexander drafted?
I was undrafted.
I see. And how many years did you play? I was going 15 years. Look at that. And yet, there is still, no matter what they do, they can't measure the knowledge you have to play the game, and they can't measure heart. Those are two things that.
And then how do you handle success? Because you're giving a young man, an awful lot of money.
That's true.
To walk into a league. And so how do you respond once you've arrived, in a sense, in your mind? You know, do you push through that? And it's hard to deal with. And a lot, and that's why it's only about 50% of the guys handle it well, right? Because you have all this money. My way was actually a lot easier because I had to grind for it to get on the team. When you're a first rounder, you're going to be there for at least 3 years.
Yeah, that's true. Well, speaking of arriving, is that exactly what happened for ASU? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Lorenzo Alexander, special teams Pro Bowler with everybody's favorite team, the Washington Redskins. I'm still struggling. because the Redskins have, if you want to, in the ranking of owners, second worst owner in the history of, well, not history.
Wow. Well, you're going in the right direction now. You got a cow guy over there. You got a cow guy running the helm. Yeah.
I am happy about Ron Rivera. He'll never be the worst owner because Dolan of the Knicks will never be surpassed. History-wise, of course, we know it's Donald Sterling, but I mean the current owners as they are. The Redskins are certainly the silver medalists in the worst owner. I don't know why I digress on that. I'm just bitter, as you can tell. So I'll get to something that's happy.
Remy passes in midair to Edwards. Edwards for three. Yes! Oh, my goodness! Rob Edwards in fuego. 17 points for Rob. Four from downtown.
ASU a winner last night, 77-72. They knocked off number 14, Oregon. If you care about the standings, what's crazy is ASU has just gone from probably not making the NCAA tournament to 9-4 and a half a game out behind Colorado for the one seed in the Pac-12 tournament. They are definitely going to be ranked in the next rankings unless they lose to Oregon State. The rankings come out on Monday early afternoon. So that will move them. This win probably moves ASU from the borderline of Dayton. And what we mean by Dayton is if you're in a, there are four 11 seeds. Two of them have to go to Dayton to kind of prove their worth before they enter the field of 64, and two 11 seeds just are in, and they don't have to worry about it. I think they move off the 11 line where they were, whether they went to Dayton or not, who knows. And this, with a win over Oregon State as well, should vault them to moving all the way up into the six range. It's kind of funny, six plays 11. So not that you care that they just changed jersey colors, but now they avoid Dayton altogether, and now they're the home team in a 6-11 game. I think they move up all the way to a six line, and somebody might even be able to talk me into a five seed. And because of the dreaded 5-12 upset, you know, sometimes people don't want to be there.
Right.
But last night was really impressive. When I say six game winning streak, when I say at one point this team was 3-4 in the conference, and now they're 9-4 in the conference. What impresses you about ASU right now? And I know that you've been a little busy retiring and moving here and stuff like that.
For me, it means things are all starting to come together. You know, you're starting to get that confidence. You're starting to obviously stringing wins together at the right time, right? You want to get high towards the end of the season as you're going into the tournament and playing with that confidence versus the other way where you maybe start hot and start trying to maybe have some ups and downs and losing some games. But I think, as we mentioned, this next win is going to be even bigger than probably the last six, right? Because now you're playing an inferior opponent after a big win, and you don't know if you're going to have the same crowd. And so you need to go in there and really solidify this six-game winning streak by going in there and beating Oregon State, which will then kind of propel you into the tournament, and then hopefully you can do something in the March Madness.
It's important that you mentioned that crowd. I hope a lot of fans come out, because when you look at the history of ASU basketball, I believe the stat is tomorrow is the 40th anniversary of the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team beating Russia.
Oh,
okay,
wow.
That's the 40th anniversary is tomorrow. Then 1 year later was the last time ASU's won six conference games in a row. Okay, so I think we're closing in on the 39th anniversary of a six-game Pac-10 winning streak for ASU, and now they break that if they can get a win Saturday and get to seven.
Had a lot of adversity all year, you know, just a lot of things that we've had to work through and fight through, and nothing was ever easy, and just. So again, so proud of how we battled and you know, starting out, you know, 1-3 and where we've come. It's an amazing run we've been on.
You heard him say starting out 1-3. They've gone 8-1 in the conference since starting 1-3. They're on an amazing roll. And on Tuesday, we always talk to Bobby Hurley here on the show. And what I can't wait to talk to him about is the young man Alonzo Verge. And the reason why is early on, he didn't play very much. And he still is coming off the bench, and yet
Verge almost turned it over in backcourt, and now Martin does, and now Remy gets it back as he bats it away to Verge. Verge drives through traffic, lays it up, lays it in. Holy moly, what a sequence that was. The Sun Devils nearly turned it over twice in backcourt, and they end up with a basket.
And the reason why is we always assume when a guy's playing this well, why didn't you put him in sooner? Why didn't you play him more sooner? And in truth, hardly ever do you look at the head coach and say, you must have done something right in how you made this guy earn playing time, brought him along correctly, because they aren't winning these games without what Verge brings off the bench.
Yeah, and that's part of the process, as we like to say, you know, just developing guys, because you can put a guy out there too early, or he's not ready, or he's practicing and just has some bad habits, and you can just see he's not ready to be put in a position to where you're relying on him. And then so you give him a little bit at a time, a little taste, a little sip, and then he can handle a little bit more. Okay, I'm going to give you a little bit more. And then he builds that confidence, because just as you can maybe lose confidence in a guy, you can put a guy out there too early. And so obviously you have to trust your coaches and your coaching staff as far as what they're seeing every day in practice, and rely on that. And obviously with Bobby Hurley's reputation and what he's been able to do with some other guys, like Rob Edwards, for example, having confidence in him, you have to treat every player a little bit differently, right? And so he obviously looking at Verge, hey, he's not ready yet, let's build him. And now that he's having the production, you're going to see more of an insurgence in him, especially as you get later and later in the season. And plus, he's still probably a little bit more fresh than some other guys as well.
What I love about Bobby Hurley is he doesn't fall into habits for no reason. I don't know if this happens in the NFL, but I'm going to make a funny reference to me as youth soccer coach.
Yeah.
But coaching 12, 13, 14-year-old girls, there were times where I just kind of fell into a trap of, this is what I do. This player goes in here. This player does this. This player does this. And one time a coach said, no, move this girl and play her at striker. And I'm like, what? She didn't play striker.
Right.
I dropped her in at striker. She scores two goals. You know? And I feel like the biggest idiot that I'm trapping this kid. And you put people out of their comfort zone sometimes, and they do better than you ever expected. Do NFL coaches fall into that trap sometimes of saying, this is what you do, this is what you only do, or I'm only playing you in this situation?
Right. We call that putting a guy in a box, right? And so long time, you'll have guys come in the league, play well, and then, okay, he's only a special teams guy. Mm-hmm. We're going to leave him there. Oh, he only plays outside backer. We're going to leave him there. Oh, he only can play in the slot. We're going to leave him there.
And all of a sudden he gets double-digit sacks with the Bills?
Yeah, and then and that's just out of experience or something happening circumstantial where you cut guys get hurt, and I get placed somewhere.
You still did it.
Yeah, I did it, but I was forced in that position.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's so important that you have assistant coaches, like in your case, that see the game differently, have a different perspective, and then you have, you don't have a big, your ego isn't so big where you won't listen to those guys because, oh, no, I'm the head coach, I see it this way. And so you allow people to speak into your lives, and so I'm sure Bobby Hurley has that as well with guys working with different position groups. He's taking in that information and then processing, okay, well, let's try this.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work, okay, let's try this a different time. And so you have to be able to do that as a coach, and that's why you have a coaching staff, and it ain't just you, because you have other guys that see it differently.
Yeah, it's worked for Bobby, and we assume that'll be the last time you ever compliment me here in the studio on that one. Get tickets to CASU, and how are they going to do against Oregon State for only $9.87? If you text Devils to 620-620, we'll send you a link so that you can see ASU Oregon State for $9.87 on the Arizona Sports Sun Devil Special by texting 620-620. We couldn't afford the L, if you were wondering, Bear. That's why I said special. Coming up next, Suns. They're going to open the second half of the season with a back-to-back starting tonight. So after being named an NBA All-Star, is it going to change how D-Book is treated, both by them and another group of people? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Yeah, here come the rooster. Yeah.
I'm going to take a guess because I can't remember for sure. At Chicago tomorrow night, I think. Suns have a back-to-back starting tonight to restart what they call the second half of the season, even if a Cal mathematics grad could figure out, now wait a minute, if there's 27 games left in an 82-game season, how is that half? Well, it's after the All-Star break.
If you make the playoffs and you actually play through April and May, then it's closer to half. But when you haven't made the playoffs in a decade,
playoffs?
Definitely
don't talk about playoffs.
I think you forget, and this is where Paul is really being annoying. He's got a NorCal guy in the Action Community Studios who can talk about actually winning championships with Golden State.
Yeah, but Zoe jumped the bandwagon.
And yeah, we want to talk about this day. We want to talk playoffs here.
I was there with the Warriors when they stickin' had Joe Barely Cares and Chris Washburn and Todd Fuller and all those other collection of boneheads. They were the Clippers for 25 years, and then all of a sudden, Zoe jumped the bandwagon about a decade ago.
I had Run DMC. I had a lot of guys. I played through a lot of stuff with the NBA. Thunder all doing that time. Come on now.
The one thing, and this is where, man, Paul, you put me in a bad spot when I have to stick up for Zoe. There is no such thing as an Oakland or San Francisco bandwagon Golden State fan. The rest of the country, there are millions of bandwagon Golden State fans.
Right.
But that team was winning 25 games a year with 17,000 people going to the game.
You don't understand. And Zoe, you can confirm or deny this. Over the last 5 years or so, when you go back to the Bay Area, every third person is wearing a Steph Curry jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's unbelievable the amount of Steph Curry gear that is in the Bay Area.
Okay. That might be true. But I just know, hey, they were going to games in it. Devin Booker, how you feeling?
When I first didn't make the game, you know, a lot of people reached out to me that, you know, I've never really had a personal connection with, and a lot of people that I respected. I said after the game, Chauncey Billups was probably the most memorable. Like, you know, I grew up idolizing this guy, and for him to reach out to me and tell me, you know, it was and I should be in the game, you know, hearing that from Chauncey Big Shot Billups, you know, that it means that much more to me.
This isn't even close to a national story, but I'm not trying to build up a local story here. It's a big deal to me. I don't know if it's a big deal to anybody else. I'm very interested in Devin Booker the rest of the way. How do officials in a league that's totally biased to its stars officiate Devin Booker as an all-star now? How is he – I don't want to say this callous, but it's the only way to talk about it. How does he now overcome the death of Kobe Bryant, which clearly affected him a lot going into the all-star break, now that he got to experience that league-wide closure through the all-star game? How does he handle being an all-star himself? Not that other teams didn't know, wow, Devin Booker's good, but he was already on the front page of the scouting report, but now it's all-star Devin Booker. Go shut him down. All these things that he's never dealt with, he now deals with the first time. How's he going to handle it going forward?
You know what? I think he's okay. I mean, I think he's going to be fine. I mean, he already had the respect of players. We just heard, obviously, a guy like Chauncey Billups, you know, obviously one of the greats, calling. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Didn't need to. You heard Damian Lillard talk about how he gave him his spot.
As soon as he was injured,
it should be him. So he's had the respect of guys, and I think at the end of the day, that's all that matters. I hope that by going to the All-Star game, he realizes that that didn't need to validate his career. Mm-hmm. That was kind of similar from when I, you know, coming through. Totally different. He's a totally different player. But I realized the Pro Bowl shouldn't validate my career once I participated in it. I'm good as these guys. I didn't need this. It's good that he went, but mm-hmm. he didn't need that to validate who he was as a player. Sometimes you get caught up in the accolades and forget I'm already good. These guys have my respect. I'm balling, and this shouldn't affect me. And so then that allows you to play freer.
Oh,
and so I expect
true.
A lot of things coming from him out of the All-Star break since he's went experienced it. I'm good. I'm not even playing for that now. I want to play for championships. It's much bigger than just playing in this All-Star game, which, in fact, has become more of a popularity vote anyway.
That's totally, true.
And that's an interesting point. Are the Suns a better team now that Devin Booker has All-Star on his resume? Does he become a better team player? Not that he was a ball hog and jacking up shots with impunity all the time, but the ball movement was certainly better at the beginning of the season. The assist totals were certainly higher. Does this just enable him more to be a guy to set up other guys to be a little more unselfish in certain situations? I'll say this. He's had the respect of the players for years. We know that. But he hasn't been able to overcome how easy it's been to dismiss the Suns as a franchise. And I to this day, think that's the main reason he was snubbed in the first place. It's just too easy to ignore the Suns on the national landscape. Around the rest of the NBA, the Suns just aren't a major player in so many different ways. And so is an injury replacement of Damian Lillard enough to go ahead and all of a sudden vault over all that that's working against him? I'm doubtful of that much, but I think the Suns probably are a better team just because it'll make him a better all-around player.
The one thing is, though, I have never seen, and you, even though you mentioned it, Paul, for a guy that's not a point guard to be with an organization that somehow did the impossible of going from 4 point guards to zero in a matter of months.
Right.
And Devin Booker says, fine, I'll play point guard. And as horrible as that experiment was, he's a much better player now, having experienced being a point guard. And I don't think the All-Star game is going to help the ball movement. I think Ricky Rubio staying healthy and learning to play defense for once in his life will get the ball movement going again, because I think that's a major key. Because remember the famous 300 passes that Steve Kerr, as head coach of the Golden State Warriors, started? Monty Williams totally believes in that. And guess what the Suns were doing the first 2 weeks of the year? 300 passes, sometimes 340 passes. And now watch what happens. That ball's not moving at all offensively. And then you're getting, because of that, bad shots. And what do bad shots lead to? Layups on the other end. So this team has just gone into this hole that they stink right now.
But doesn't that start with your all-star? If Devin Booker is more prone to sharing the ball and he's the one who's facilitating and is the catalyst for the ball movement, don't you think that might spark more of a team buy-in?
I want player movement that leads to ball movement. And when I'm looking at four guys standing still, then I want Devin Booker shooting.
Yeah.
You know?
What
else do I want? I want it. And now, if you actually get more guys moving, and here's something that's scary. Did the ball movement slow down once Ayton got here?
Yes.
Now what's going on?
He stands around far too much, just period. He spectates too much. We've seen it. A lot of times when the shot goes up, he's just sort of looking instead of getting into position to grab a rebound and getting physical with someone.
Ayton's the biggest question in the next 27 games. Now, the first 2 weeks of Ayton returning from suspension, he was awful. Now, people will say, well, he just got back.
Right.
But, I mean, it was just a lack of awareness. Now, his defense has actually improved to the point that he's equally as bad as everybody. Sometimes it's his fault, sometimes it's not. When he first came back, almost every play was DeAndre Ayton's fault defensively. Now it's time to, you can at least stop ripping him, because he's equally as ineffective defensively as everybody else. Now what are they going to do? I'm hoping it's just a rest issue. It's a young guy issue, not being ready for the stretch run, and now they're going to be back. But we'll see. And starting with a back-to-back against Toronto, Chicago is probably not – Chicago's not great, but it's not the best way to see whether they're ready. But, man, you guys are young. Let's do something.
Ayton's back. Sharge is back. Aaron Baines is back.
Everybody but Frank.
Right. So let's see it. Let's see what you got. Because James Jones has to make decisions by the end of the season, going into the offseason, who stays and who goes.
Former assistant coach with Golden State who knows how to win championships, Willie Green, is filling in for the head coach today on our Talk with the Coach, as Monty Williams is going to be right in the middle of a coaching meeting with the other coaches, and Willie Green doesn't have this scout. And it's a cool way to say they divide up the scouting responsibilities for each assistant coach, and this is not the Raptors are not a Willie Green scouted team, so Willie's going to fill in for the coach in the middle of a coaches meeting. That comes up at 8:15 today. Ken Kendrick is actually spoken. We have an owner talking about the Astros next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Lorenzo Alexander, Bills linebacker, Cardinals linebacker, filling in for Wolf today. Wolf will be off today and Monday. It's Doug and Wolf live in the Auction Community Studios. Good morning. I am amazed. This is the first story. The Astros cheating scandal is the first story I can remember. Feel free to tweet me at Doug987FM if you can think of one where the media did a bad job covering it, didn't build it up to the heights of where it could have gone, and it's the players that are building it up. And I listen, some of them, it's not their goal. They're just being asked questions.
Right.
But the latest one is Jonathan Lucroy, who was a longtime catcher for the Brewers. It still has a sad but hysterical story in batting 315 or something and having a great season. And then his wife is moving. His wife decided to travel with him on a road trip. And she's moving something off the bed, and it knocks the suitcase onto his hand. As he's on the ground, like tying his shoes or something, and it messes up with his thumb, and he's out for a while. And man, Brewers fans were all mad at her. Like, okay, give the woman a break. But that's the story I always remember with Jonathan Lucroy. Well, he's been in the American League West and knew about the scandal with the Astros, not to just the extent of it, but knew about it and talked about the mental strain of having to adjust his signs for every pitch.
Right.
And then he said he felt like, you know, he had a college exam after every game.
Yeah.
That he went through. And then the struggle of which pitchers can handle it and which pitchers can't.
Right.
Because
yeah.
you can imagine, Zoe, a lot of times you just want to get into a flow. You just want to get into a muscle memory athletic rhythm. And if you've got to overthink every single time you do it, you're not an athlete anymore.
No, I mean, communication is key. I mean, even on the football field, and this goes, I think, in every sport. You know, if you have any type of signs, people are always trying to get them. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And so it was this one time in the Super Bowl, one of my coaches was telling me they actually had to use wristbands because the opposing team was stealing their signs or was known for doing that. And they went out there and had a whole bunch of mental mistakes. Because now, instead of just being in the flow of their normal signals, they own wristbands looking, and it just caused chaos because it was outside of the routine.
That makes sense.
I completely can relate to that. When you try to switch up stuff, everything because of what the opposing team is doing, you just have little lapses that create bust, and then that leads to big plays. And that in itself, even if they don't know the exact play, leads to an advantage for them because now guys are out there making mistakes and they're taking advantage of it.
Well, even if I'm totally being an idiot here, I admit it, but Luis Severino is being shut down by the Yankees, and they said that the problems go all the way back to pitching against the Astros. We were talking to Archie Bradley yesterday, and Archie even said that if this is in your head, you might change your whole mechanics because you think you're tipping pitches when you're not. So am I reaching? Yes, but what if Luis Severino somehow injured himself changing his mechanics to avoid tipping pitches when he was never tipping pitches? It was the Astros cheating. I mean, it's a reach, yes, but you could have actually been led to injury because of this thing. Well, now Ken Kendrick was on with Burns and Gambo yesterday, and he's one of the few owners that have talked about it. Because what's so weird is it was almost a dead story until the Astros apologized. And their apology was so bad and stupid that now more people are upset about it. Here is Ken Kendrick talking about Jim Crane, the owner, when he said, well, we weren't cheating, but we were breaking the rules. And I don't know if it had an effect on the game.
I think he was wrong. I think it's incontrovertible that the level of misdeeds that have been documented, of course it impacted the game.
Okay, so do you think they got a benefit?
They have an enormously talented club, a lot of great ball players. Those ball players became better ball players because they often knew what pitch was being thrown to them. And I it's extremely disappointing to me that this all happened. It's sad for our sport that there's an ongoing saga.
Now, I got to tell you, Zoe, I'm one of the people that look at a commissioner. And I've talked to Rob Manfred before, really good dude. I think he's a very smart man. And up until this point, I thought he was a good commissioner. So I don't want to say somebody makes one mistake and that shows that they shouldn't be commissioner anymore. Because, you know, I've already made three today and I would hate to find out that, that I'm gone because of a mistake. Yet, what's the number one thing you hire a commissioner for? Would be crisis management and leadership through a time like this.
Right.
And it looks bad. And Ken Kendrick is saying, wait a minute, hold up on anybody that's talking about Rob Manfred.
I think Rob is being unfairly criticized at this stage of the game by a number of people who haven't taken the time to stop and say, if I had his position, how would I have handled this? What would I have done? I am in a position where I have done that. And I think I'd have to say to you that I can't come up how I would have approached dealing with the issue in a way that would be demonstrably different than he did.
I can come up with that way. I would have done something different, but I can't tell you whether it would have worked.
Right.
And that would have been, I would have gone and tried to investigate. Yep. And of course, the players' union, and it's their legal right to do so, would have said, you're not talking to anybody if you're going to punish them. And why would any player come clean with what they did if they knew punishment was coming? So once that was off the table, that I'm not going to get them to talk, I would have tried to investigate to the best of my ability without them. And then made a judgment what I'm going to do. I might not have gotten anywhere. But once you've given them immunity, we're kind of toast now.
Yeah, I mean, it's always hard in these type of situations, especially as a commissioner from that perspective, when you're trying to punish one of your bosses, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're punishing an organization who is actually higher, who you work for.
Yep.
And you see the same thing in the NFL when it's a team thing. Mm-hmm. It's hard to manage that because you're punishing one of your bosses, a la the Patriots.
Yep, yep, yep.
And Kraft and everything that goes on
Spygate,
up there, right?
The
yeah,
gate,
it's just hard
Bengals
because
gate.
He's paying for you and you're looking at him. He's hired you, brought you in. And so it gets a little
but what do you think you should do now?
In that situation.
You're one of the few people that know exactly what it's like to be heavily involved in a union.
Yeah.
You are on the executive council still for the NFL Players Association. And what if, I'm going to throw out a fake number here.
Yeah.
What if 80% of your members want punishment for the other 20% of the members? That's not normal, and yet that's the feeling a lot of people are getting around baseball, that the players are upset at the players of the Astros.
Yeah, and that's true, I mean, in some extent, but I mean, at the end of the day, the union's sole responsibility is to protect players, whether or not you agree with them or not. You have been formed, this body's been formed to protect our guys. And so I'm going to set out, whether they're right, wrong, or different, or if I agree with what they did, to use every tool that we have to protect them, to keep their job, and obviously to keep the money in their pockets so they can continue to play. And that's just how it is, regardless if I don't like it. Because there's some things that go on now, like, why are we fighting over marijuana? You know, I mean, just whatever it may be. Why are we spending so much time litigating this? Because it technically costs our union money to represent guys.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I understand the sole purpose is to protect our men, whether or not I agree with that specific situation.
Because it's so weird in this situation. Jose Altuve won an MVP. Aaron Judge was second. How much did Altuve benefit by the cheating scandal? So there's clauses in his contract that maybe you would have had more money if you were the MVP.
Right,
then there's the guys that get sent down to the minors after an outing with the Astros when they got completely torched. Now, wait a minute. What would have happened to that guy? And so a lot of the players feel like, I lost money, and or a free agent coming out of Houston might have made money based on their stats that would have gone to me. Now, is it a reach? Maybe. But once you open this can of worms of cheating, I don't feel bad for anybody reaching to blame you for something.
Yeah, not at all. And it actually does make sense, because for me, and you know, I kind of think about me in that situation. For me, I don't have talent enough, even if I know what pitches are coming, to hit it. But if you know you are an MVP caliber player and I know what's coming and I'm not sitting on anything else, my chance of hitting the ball and getting a hit or a home run goes way out of the room.
Giancarlo Stanton said in 2017 he was so hot.
Right.
He thinks he would hit 80 home runs if you would have told him what was coming every time.
Of course.
And I believe him.
If you have the talent to do it, so now you're making a great player even greater.
Yes.
Because I know what's going on. That's half of it. It's just thinking about the game and the possibilities.
Yes.
And you get into a zone because then everything slows down. Now I know what's coming.
Yeah.
You're that much better. So it did have an impact on the game.
It was a really good interview on Burns and Gambo, if you missed it, with Ken Kendrick.
It's very disappointing that a team would engage in an orchestrated a process of cheating in the game and cheating their competitors. And, you know, I have little to no toleration for those who cheat.
And if you haven't had a chance, get to ArizonaSports.com and listen to it, because there's sometimes people say exclusive just to throw it out there, and go across the country and find owners that are willing to talk to the local sports talk radio station. I don't think you're going to find a lot of that type of audio.
Right.
And we have it for you at ArizonaSports.com. And props to Ken Kendrick for having the courage to come on and say what he felt. Coming up next, top stories of the day, Rush Hour Reboot, Maloney Drive, Zoe Reacts, next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.